All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is June 4th, 2026. And our top story this morning, the Bitcoin sell-off, a quite brutal sell-off in Bitcoin, has now entered its fourth day. As we speak, the price has hovering around 63,000 and change after hitting a low overnight of 61,300. And on what started this sell-off? Yeah, we're in crypto winter here, but what really triggered this? Michael Saylor selling 32 Bitcoin is what set this in motion. That is laughable. Strategy holds over 840,000 Bitcoin. They sold 32 of them, a rounding error, to cover the dividend on their Stretch preferred shares, and the market has lost its marbles over it. Talk about fragility in the Bitcoin market. And this is exposing the biggest weakness in the crypto market right now. What if that big scenario, what if Strategy was ever forced to sell in any serious amounts? Could the market absorb that? And the answer is clearly no. There is not enough liquidity to absorb any kind of sizable forced selling by Strategy here. Also going on this morning, we've got XRP, ETH, Solana, all selling off with it. Cascading liquidations, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. But look, the RSI on the Bitcoin chart is now so far into oversold territory. There's going to be a bounce probably very soon. But this has really exposed some severe underlying weaknesses in the Bitcoin market. And we're going to take a look at that Stretch preferred shares, Michael Saylor's latest iteration of the infinite money glitch, and show why the infinite money glitch now may be infinitely working in the downward direction. It might be turning into a doom loop instead of an infinite money glitch. Now, also going on this morning, big news from Broadcom, one of the big semiconductor names, a big AI name. They announced earnings. And they are down big, 14% lower as of the making of this video. After their outlook disappointed, they projected Q3 revenue of $16 billion when the market was expecting 17.2. Apologies, guys. I'm still nursing a sore throat here. And it was kind of funny with the Broadcom earnings. The CEO Hock Tan started the earnings call. He accidentally started reading the results from Q2 of last year, and he may have caused a little bit of a panic. Maybe we don't have the chatbot write the script for our earnings calls next quarter. I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. We've got oils lower by about $3 this morning, trading around $93 on mostly jawboning and relentless optimism that peace could break out at any minute. Negotiations with the Iranians appear to have hit another stalemate. There's like two or three stalemates already, but we got a new one now. The Iranians want their assets unfrozen. They want billions of dollars, and those assets were frozen for a reason. And the U.S. has said that's a non-starter. And, well, look, if the U.S. blinks on that, if we give them what they want, that'll be pallets of cash all over again, which they'll just use the money to buy more missiles and blow up more shit. So why would we do that? It's obviously not going to happen. So the blockade is going to stay in place here, guys. Trump mentioned just the other day that we could have the blockade removed as soon as Labor Day. Which, oh, that's 3 months from now? That's not really a very soon thing. They've been telling us a deal is imminent and minutes away for about a month now. Now we're getting Labor Day. All right, we're really bad this morning. Russians are acknowledging that oil production is down, that their oil output has shrunk by about 460,000 barrels per day. It's kind of hilarious why they're saying that oil production is down. They're talking about unscheduled maintenance at refineries as the reason. And don't laugh. That is a true statement. Because if you look at the schedule at those refineries, I think you'll find being blown up by Ukrainian drones was not on the schedule. And therefore, Russian oil production is down due to unscheduled maintenance at refineries. See, it's just it's all about your semantics and point of view here. We've got Ed Zitron has just completely torched Sam Altman on Twitter. This was hilarious. Man, they just won't let me go this morning. Yeah, Ed Zitron torching Sam Altman on Twitter about the backlash on token-based billing. And while it is kind of funny, Ed Zitron is hilarious. He's been doing an excellent job exposing the AI bubble over these last year or two. And the pushback now is on token-based billing. Everybody's watching their bills blow out, in particular with Anthropic, but apparently OpenAI is seeing it too. And, well, when you're scheduling the biggest freaking IPO in history and all of a sudden your customers are pissed off because your prices just got jacked up, well, don't expect those revenue numbers to stay up forever. I really think we have now seen the top in this bubble and the clock is ticking. They need to jam those IPOs out the door, dump those bags on retail investors as quick as possible before those revenues start falling and this bubble bursts. We've got Craig Fuller is out with some pretty crazy freight data, all suggesting that the industrial economy is booming. And while some of those data points have me scratching my heads, most of them you can easily tie to data centers. And you can see it in the numbers. It's pretty incredible. Challenger job cuts are out this morning. 97,000 jobs were announced in May. Most of those job cuts were in big tech, and most of them were AI related. That's also, let's see, the most since January and the highest May number since 2020. And you may recall May of 2020 was a pretty awful time for everybody. And well, it's just another point that has me looking at that JOLTS number that we got earlier this week and saying the simplest explanation for that 750,000-ish jobs openings that were created is that the number's just BS. We've got SoftBank is buying a life insurance company this morning. A Japanese life insurance company. That's interesting. Why would Masa-san be buying a life insurance company? Perhaps suddenly, you know, he's getting up there in years. Maybe he likes the idea of providing families security during difficult times and wants to be a part of that. Or maybe, alternatively, maybe he wants to buy that life insurance company for access to their $116 billion balance sheet so that he can load it up with debt instruments from OpenAI and his portfolio companies. You know, just like private equity is doing here in the United States. Or, you know, maybe the bullshit with the families and everything. That could be his reason also. We've got Blackstone as the latest private credit firm that is gating redemptions. That one was announced this morning. I told you we were going to get a cascade of stories about private credit limiting redemptions again. Got another one today, this time Blackstone. And we've got a 2020s bingo update. Who had flesh-eating New World screwworm? Flesh-eating New World screwworm. Anybody? Some of you guys in the back? No? Well, okay. Well, that's a thing. Yeah, that's kind of terrifying. We'll talk about that and why that is important for anybody in the cattle industry. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. As usual, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. And don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every day. Oh, man, they're really bad this morning. S&P 500 is down 15 points this morning, 0.2% in the red. That's being influenced, I believe, by the sell-off in tech. The Dow, however, is deeply positive here. Look at that, 540 points in the green. The Dow is really liking that cheaper oil this morning. Yeah, United Health is up a little bit here, but the Dow is the outlier, up a full 1.08%. And the NASDAQ is selling off here, off by 321 points or 1.05%. Got that sell-off in Broadcom is contributing bigly to that one. You can kind of see the rotation here out of tech and back into the safer names in the Dow here. Just maybe tech got a little bit ahead of itself over the last couple of weeks. Hey, I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. But just maybe we've taken this AI thing just a little too far or, you know, help yourself to another trillion on the way out. Either way, looking over at the DXY, we've got the dollar is a little bit weaker here. Largely driven by lower oil prices this morning, 99.25 for the Dixie. That's lower by 29 basis points. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are lower. Again, the cheaper oil this morning is helping with that. 30-year yield is at 4.964. That's off by about 2.5 points. The 10-year yield is at 4.459, down 3.5 points. The 2-year, 4.035, off by almost 5 points. And the one-month treasury, 3.672, lower by 1 basis point. And here's the big one this morning, the sell-off in Bitcoin continuing now in its fourth day. Although we are off the lows here, look at this, 4 days in a row, this sell-off. We started in the low 70s. I mean, look, on Sunday, we were around 73,000. Now we're at 63, $10,000 down in 4 days, all because Michael Saylor sold 32, count them, 32 of his 840,000 plus Bitcoin. So let's hope he doesn't sell 33 Bitcoin next time, because I'm not sure a lot of Bitcoin investors can afford that. Look, guys, this is Crypto Winter. It's going to go on for a couple more months. We've gotten off kind of cheap so far this winter compared to sell-offs we've had during previous halving cycles. I know nominally the decline in Bitcoin price has been more severe, but on a percentage basis, it's actually been a lot lower than prior halving cycles, which also would suggest that there is plenty more selling to come. We probably won't hit our bottom till sometime around this fall. Now, we got some data here. In crypto news, Bitcoin steadies above 60,000 while derivatives send an unambiguous warning. The crypto market succumbed to a wave of selling pressure and liquidations on Thursday, with Bitcoin tumbling to around 61,300 before recovering to as high as 64,006. Again, we're right in the middle of that range right now. Ether lost 3% since midnight, now trading around 1750. Tom Lee, Bitmine, you guys maybe take a look at that one. That might be important. Several other altcoins saw deeper declines, with NEAR, ZEC, and JUP all losing more than 13%. The downside move triggered a wave of liquidations, with $1.7 billion worth of future positions being forcibly closed due to the slide. $750 million worth of that can be attributed to Bitcoin, $390 million to Ether. So crypto derivatives are getting clobbered here. And this is kind of interesting to note here. Solana is a notable exception. Open interest in Solana surged to a record of 72.16 million tokens, even as prices declined, a combination that typically signals an influx of short positions. The sentiment is understandable given Solana dropped below its February low, while Bitcoin, Ethereum, and XRP held above theirs. Look, I don't deal in altcoins, guys. I own a little bit of Ethereum that I mined years ago, but other than that, Bitcoin's the only one I mess with. But if you're into altcoins, be careful with Solana here. Apparently, the shorts are piling into that one. But here's the big warning, guys, I want to talk about. This is Stretch, or Strategy's preferred stock. This is Sailor's Infinite Money Glitch. This thing is supposed to be $100. That's what Michael Saylor has said. We're going to maintain it at par, he calls it. They're going to keep his shares pegged at $100. And if the share price ever goes above 100, they'll sell more shares, use it to buy more Bitcoin. If it goes below 100, they would raise the dividend in order to convince people to buy it and bid it back up to $100. Now, here's the problem. The dividend is currently 12.15% with the stock at $94.65. So he's going to have to raise his dividend even higher to get that back up to 100, which he has promised to do. Well, where does Strategy get the money to pay this dividend? By selling Bitcoin. And selling Bitcoin, that 32 Bitcoin they sold earlier this week, is what started this cascade of liquidations and this $10,000 sell-off in Bitcoin. So if they raise their dividend, it might bring Strategy price back up here, or Stretch price back up, but then they're going to have to sell more Bitcoin to meet that bigger dividend. And that, folks, is how an infinite money glitch turns into a doom loop freaking overnight, because Michael Saylor is a drunken sailor with what he does and the way he leverages and borrows and spends. And there is a reckoning coming in Bitcoin. And this time around, it looks like Strategy is the leading candidate for FTX this time. All right, also going on in commodities this morning, we've got spot gold is higher, being helped by lower oil prices, 45.07. That's higher by $72 or 1.6%. Spot silver, 74.83, higher by $2.10 or 2.9% higher. I like the shiny. We'll have more to say about that in a second. Copper is higher by 0.5%. Platinum, 1.6% higher. Palladium is down a fraction of 1%. And crude oil is down 3.33%. Again, the jawboning appears to be working this morning at 92.84 for WTI crude. And if I might do a moment of shameless self-promotion here, I posted this video late last night. This one is for all the stackers. I say it every morning that I like the shiny. That doesn't mean I like all the people in the shiny space. You're going to want to see this one, guys. You've got to watch out. The gold and silver industry, like any other industry, there are good and there are bad actors. And they're not always so easy to tell apart. And this Silver Trade outfit, I've been watching them since those AI slop videos started running rampant earlier this year, late last year. They were one of the outfits that was pushing some of those silly narratives. And, well, they really got under my skin yesterday. And so we mentioned a little bit about Silver Trade last night. Anybody who is stacking precious metal needs to see this, because this involves one of the big three bullion dealers here in the U.S. So check that one out in the feed when you have a moment. All right, the latest on oil here. Iran demands frozen assets be released. An initial phase of deal with U.S. leading to a stalemate. The dispute has emerged as one of central obstacles preventing progress toward a memorandum of understanding between Tehran and Washington, which would be just the first step. Negotiations between the U.S. and Iran have reached a significant stalemate on top of the other significant stalemates, with Tehran insisting that billions of dollars in frozen Iranian assets be released during the very first phase of any MOU agreement, according to two sources familiar with the discussions. This was in here. Senior administration officials have communicated to mediators that Washington will not release any significant funds at the outset of an agreement without concrete Iranian concessions regarding its nuclear program and security arrangements related to the Strait of Hormuz. Yeah, they're wanting their pallets of cash again, and they're saying we want money up front this time. The U.S. is saying that is a non-starter for us. If you want your assets unfrozen, stop trying to build a nuclear bomb and stop blowing up boats in the Strait of Hormuz. Meanwhile, we've got Russia acknowledges for the first time that oil output is down and blames unscheduled maintenance. Yep, that is factually correct. They were not on the schedule to rebuild the refineries after being blown up by drones. Russian oil production has fallen since the start of the year, Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said on Thursday, blaming the decline on unplanned maintenance at refineries. The world's third largest oil producer stopped publishing data back in April of 2023. Novak didn't state the reason for the refinery maintenance, but Ukraine has intensified attacks on Russian refineries in recent months. Current production is indeed somewhat lower than it was at the beginning of the year, Novak told reporters at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, which, by the way, there were drone attacks in St. Petersburg on the first day of that economic forum. They're saying it was due to unscheduled maintenance. According to the IEA, Russia's crude oil production fell by 460,000 barrels per day in April from a year earlier to around 8.8 million barrels per day. So, look, that is exacerbating the global oil shortages. Not maybe as big of an influence as the Strait of Hormuz, but certainly not helping things, that's for sure. All right, another big one this morning. Broadcom slides after AI chip outlook disappoints investors. Broadcom shares fell in extended trading after the company delivered a disappointing forecast for AI chip revenue, signaling its efforts to gain ground in the burgeoning industry are going more slowly than anticipated. AI semiconductor revenue will be $16 billion in fiscal third quarter, which runs through July, the company said in a statement. Analysts had predicted $17.2 billion on average. Chief Executive Officer Hock Tan said Broadcom will sell $56 billion in AI chips in the fiscal year that ends in October. That forecast fell short of analysts' estimates of 57.6. Though the company is making headway in pivoting to AI customers, it's up against outsized investor expectations. Broadcom added roughly $270 billion in market value over just the last five trading sessions before the earnings report, and it's gone. Broadcom has signed and expanded long-term deals with companies like Alphabet, Anthropic, and Meta, using mostly off-balance sheet debt and special-purpose financing vehicles. But questions remain about how much revenue will be recognized in each quarter as opposed to being accounted for in a multi-year backlog. Against that backdrop, the latest report failed to satisfy investors, with the stock falling more than 10% in late trading, although it was up 38% through the year, 38% year-to-date at the close. And this stock, not looking so good this morning, down 13.7%, just barely off its lows of the morning, but not by a whole lot. But again, if you look, it's down to where it was trading about 5 days ago. And I mean, this vertical move here, you think just maybe the semis went a little bit nutty, just maybe, I don't know. You know, I'm admittedly bearish in the space, guys. So, you know, broken clock and such, all that stuff. But, you know, just maybe we took this one a little bit too far. Broadcom is a $2.27 trillion company, or at least it was as of yesterday's close. All right, and shout out to Ed Zitron on Twitter. He runs the Where's Your Ed At Substack and podcast. He says, this one had me cracking up. He says, OpenAI is absolutely cooked. This is loser language. You can't be 4 years into the bubble saying, yeah, our customers have a huge issue with how expensive our business is. You just raised $122 billion. You can't say shit like this. And here's what Sam Altman said. He also said the cost question came up quite suddenly at the beginning of 2026. The issue never came up, Altman said. People were totally happy with the amount they were spending back when it was an all-you-can-eat buffet for one low monthly fee. But then they changed to token-based billing, and people's costs ballooned overnight, in some cases by thousands of percent. Now AI costs are a huge issue, he said. Oh, what? I thought it was like the big era of new era of human productivity unlocked and all these gains. No, now AI costs are a huge issue, huh? On the panel, Altman referenced the meme, my company spent my entire 2026 budget in Q1. Can you make this more efficient? Altman said the company was continuing to push its models and explore other ways to deliver more value for less spend. Boy, it almost sounds like that bubble has peaked, doesn't it? Shout out to Ed Zitron for that one. But don't worry, the bubble has peaked at just the perfect time. This is from Vital Knowledge Media. A record 33% of U.S. household sector's total wealth was in stocks at the end of 2025. That beats the roughly 30% during the meme stock and SPAC mania of 2021 and the 20% share reached in Q1 of 2000, right before the dot-com bubble burst. So Americans are more exposed to stocks than ever before, as the biggest bubble, the biggest financial fraud in human history starts to unravel. Well, just remember, nobody saw this coming. And a shout out to Craig Fuller. He's got some great data this morning on the industrial economy. And again, this crazy build out in data centers. He says the best test for the health of industrial economy is through the lens of bulk rail freight volumes. Rail car volumes are surging with metal, coke, which feeds into steel production, iron, lumber, vehicles, and food and ag showing incredible strength. The strength of freight is not just about the compliance crackdown. It's apparent in rail commodities as well. The compliance crackdown has been largely driving truck rates, but you don't have a similar crackdown going on in rail. And this is all by rail car volume. So this isn't dollar amount of the cargo. This is the total amount of stuff being moved. And look at coke. That's coking coal for steel production, up 52.5% year over year. The steel industry apparently is booming. Maybe some of that is being driven by metal tariffs. I think most of that is probably being driven by steel demand for data centers. Grain cargoes up 33.8%. All right, now that's a little deceptive because this is year over year numbers. And you may recall a year ago, the Chinese were buying precisely bupkis U.S. grains. And so, yeah, that's up 33% year over year, but that's up from a historical low. I wouldn't look too much into the grain cargoes. But then look at all these other metals. Metallic ores up 33%. Iron and steel scrap almost 25% year over year. Lumber and wood cargoes up 17%. That one's got me scratching my head. Where's all that lumber going? The home builders are not really projecting strength here, and yet we've got more volume of wood being shipped. That's interesting. Same goes for motor vehicles and car parts, 9% higher. I'm seeing all kinds of articles that say millions of car buyers have left the market. They just can't afford cars. So why is all this cargo shipping? Maybe this is freight cars full of Cybertrucks heading to SpaceX. Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. Stone, clay, and glass products, waste and scrap cargoes, food products are up, farm products are up. A lot of stuff moving by rail. The industrial economy is booming, and you better believe data centers is driving most of this. And at the same time, in truck transport, again, Craig Fuller saying we have liftoff. Tender rejection rates are picking up momentum, surging overnight to 17.4%. Tender rejections is when people are trying to get stuff shipped and the trucker says, no, thanks, I don't want the business. That means when it comes to moving freight, it is a seller's market. Trucking capacity is getting harder and harder to find. Brokers and shippers are definitely paying up, but the bigger risk is that they may not find trucks to haul their freight. Guys, this is on top of the diesel prices going up. So it is getting a lot more expensive. This is the tender rejection index hitting a new high. That means it's getting more expensive to ship stuff. So this is all putting upward pressure on consumer prices, more inflation on the horizon. We got Challenger job cuts came out this morning. U.S.-based employers announced 97,000 job cuts in May of 2026. That's the most since January, up from 83,387 in April. And it's the highest May total since 2020, which was a terrible year. On top of the headline AI story, we're seeing a sharp rise in cuts tied to acquisitions and mergers and a jump in bankruptcy-related losses, which tells me companies are restructuring aggressively as they reposition for an AI-driven economy. That's according to Andy Challenger from Challenger, Gray and Christmas. So job cuts up several months in a row. Typically, job cuts hit their lows around this time. You tend to get a surge in job cuts in January and February, but it's coming on a little bit later. AI is the reason being given for a lot of these job cuts, but it's another data point that makes me think that headline about 700,000 jobs being added in professional and business services in the JOLTS report from earlier this week just wasn't an accurate data point. Meanwhile, SoftBank's PayPay to buy T&D Life Insurer for $840 million. SoftBank's payments unit is buying the life insurance unit of T&D Holdings for 134 billion yen. That's about $840 million to broaden its offerings and better compete in Japan's ballooning fintech market. Japan's dominant payments app said it will take a 70% stake in the privately held T&D Financial Life Insurance, and the deal expected to close in October of next year. One Investment Management's 1IM Indigo will acquire a 15% stake. A unit of SoftBank's telecom unit, PayPay, is angling for a bigger slice of Japan's households' near $15 trillion in financial assets. Consumers are spending more time online, spurring double-digit growth in fintech revenues across the industry. And this is the important thing here. This is what SoftBank wants: a chunk of Japan's $15 trillion in financial assets. Why does SoftBank want that? Because this way, they can park all of that open AI debt and all of those bonds and other garbage instruments they're using, circular financing, to fund the AI data center build-out and keep this bubble alive, because SoftBank is completely, entirely thrown everything they have into that one basket. Now they need to buy an insurance company so they can find a place to park all those dog shit assets. Private equity firms are doing this in the United States. That is why SoftBank is buying a life insurer for $840 million. Meanwhile, we've got another private credit headline. Investors seek to pull 10% from Blackstone's giant private credit fund. The fund capped client redemptions at 5% and about face from Blackstone's decision to pay out all requests earlier this year. Investors are trying to pull more money from the biggest private credit fund in the world. Investors in Blackstone's flagship private credit fund, known as BCRED, asked to redeem 10% of their shares in the second quarter, up from about 8% in the first quarter. I told you we'd get more of these, and I told you they'd get worse. And there you go. You've got another one, 10% now, up from 8%. Remember, all these private credit guys were at their conferences talking about how the bottom was in, that we've seen the worst of it. It's all uphill from here. Nope, still getting worse. Blackstone will limit redemptions from the $79 billion fund to 5%, a reversal from its strategy in March when it opted to pay the full amount requested. The about face highlights rising financial strain on managers of large private credit funds marketed to individual investors who continue to ask for their money back. Redemptions across the industry soared in the first quarter when firms like BlackRock, Blue Owl, and Ares were forced to impose limits on how much was taken out. The amount of withdrawal requests have ranged from around 10% to 22% that Blue Owl faced in the first quarter for its then $36 billion flagship fund. Blackstone's withdrawals were being closely watched as an early second quarter gauge on whether investors continue to race for the exits. Cliffwater said earlier this week that investors requested to redeem 17% of the shares in its $31 billion fund in the second quarter. Guys, we're going to get, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to get more and more of these. Mark my words. This is what, the third or the fourth one now that we've gotten this quarter? It's still getting worse for private credit. And last but not least, let's end on a high note of 2020's bingo, shall we? Why a single screwworm parasite found in the U.S. is raising alarm. Again, who had the flesh-eating New World screwworm on their 2020's bingo card? U.S. authorities are accelerating emergency measures after the flesh-eating New World screwworm parasite was detected in a three-week-old calf in South Texas, the first animal case reported in the country in almost a decade. It's a setback for local farm health officials who have worked extensively to stop a recent outbreak in Mexico from spreading to the U.S., and an ominous development for the already embattled livestock sector. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins has said there is no reason to believe that this case is the beginning of a broader establishment of screwworm fly in the U.S. Well, isn't that comforting? So what exactly is screwworm? The New World screwworm is a parasitic fly that lays its eggs in the wounds of warm-blooded animals. After hatching, the larva burrow into living tissue like a screw twisting into wood, giving the parasite its name, causing severe damage and, if untreated, potentially death. Most infestations occur in cattle, wildlife, and pets, though humans can also be affected. Treatment typically involves removing the larvae and disinfecting the wound. If caught early, infestations can be treated successfully, although the process of extracting hundreds of maggots from flesh can be an arduous one. That's outright terrifying. Okay, I'm going to go cry myself to sleep tonight. Screwworm can spread rapidly and kill even fully grown livestock in as little as 10 days if left untreated, according to a UN Food and Ag organization. U.S. officials say there is no indication that the parasite has spread beyond this isolated case, but even a single case raises fears of a broader outbreak, which could have a devastating impact for ranchers. According to a 2025 analysis in the Department of Agriculture, a large-scale screwworm outbreak similar to the one in the 1970s that severely affected the U.S. livestock industry could cost the Texas economy alone as much as $1.8 billion. And that is sure as hell not going to help with the shrinking size of the U.S. cattle herd and the outrageously high prices we're all paying for beef at the supermarket. Looks like that's going to get higher even still. And once again, guys, more inflation on the horizon, this time thanks to the New World screwworm, the flesh-eating parasitic maggot. Okay. That's a nice high note to end the show on, I think, right? Isn't that nice? Y'all enjoy your day now. Thanks, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Don't forget to check out that video about silver trade. Look for that in the feed. Thank you very much to all my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. And, hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.